Welcome to the Doctor Who podcast from Casterbris. My name is Christian Corley, and with me this week is James McLean. I say this week as if it's some sort of rotation, but it does seem to be the pair of us quite regularly at the moment. But I'm going to possibly bring someone else to chat to us in a couple of weeks' time, but we'll see how we go with that. And welcome to you, dear listener. I wonder if you notice, you probably spotted the title of this week's podcast and you thought, oh, they're going to talk about the last episode of Doctor Who Flux. And yes, we are. But before we do that, I wonder if you noticed, dear listener, that Sylvester McCoy is going to appear in the new movie of The Monsters by Rob Zombie, directed by Rob Zombie. Now, the reason I bring this up is partially because it's Sylvester McCoy. And also, I'm a little bit guilty. I didn't know Rob Zombie was a film director. I always knew him as the lead singer of White Zombie. And I've clearly missed like 20 years of his directorial career. And I feel a little bit out of the loop. But there's a nice photo of McCoy with weird hair and a beard and dressed as the butler, the character Igor, who is the Munsters. Did the Munsters? I don't remember them having a butler, but apparently they do now.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't know whether there's a sort of a point in canon where they did, but no.
Yeah, it's funny, the Monsters, isn't it? And the Addams Family and all those sort of shows. Because we were regularly exposed to black and white TV growing up. And the idea that that would happen now is just that kids would now be expected to watch black and white TV on a Saturday morning or whatever. It's just bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I noticed Addams Family got a bit of a revival over Halloween on TikTok.
Oh,
there
right.
There was a bit of a dance phase where Morticia and Wednesday were clipped out and put to music dancing. And the dancing was really good. And it just sort of invaded. And it was kind of weird because I was thinking the same thing. Is that, yeah, I kind of watched this on weekends when it would pop on, and there wasn't white TV, but Addams Family was one of them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is a strange
and monsters.
And obviously,
it didn't last that long. Addams Family, thought it lasted longer than it did.
Was it just a couple of series or something, right?
Like Mr. Ben, I used to think Mr. Ben went on for years and years, and you find it had 12 episodes, right? Really.
Yeah, they just recycled them all, didn't they? They're all so similar that they all just merge into one. Yeah. Hold on. I just need to tie up my shoe. Just got a loose end on my shoe.
Why do you need to tie up?
Oh, hold on. There's another loose end on my shoe. Hang on. Three loose ends on one shoe. That can't be right, can it? Oh, Doctor Who the Vanquishers.
Was that the segue?
That was a very clumsy segue into Doctor Who the Vanquishers, yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, that is the worst. I mean, I honestly have never heard as bad a segue as that.
Really? In all the years we've been doing this?
Oh, I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about ever. I can't think of a worse segue.
In the history of segues.
And if any listeners can actually either find a worse segue or want to agree with me, and I'm afraid shame you a little bit for that, then let's go for it. Let's double down on this.
That's fine. My alternative was what happens when anticlimax and climax collide. That might have been a little bit better. There. All right, okay. There's a little slightly risque element to that as well, isn't there? So anyway, Doctor Who, The Vanquishers, in which Chris Chibnall attempted to spin more plates than any other circus performer and ended up looking like a Greek wedding. Is that better? Can we go with that?
I'm sure it would have done the men's clubs proud in the 1980s, but yes, okay, it's okay. See Jimmy Tarbuck being happy with that one.
Well, there's a strong Liverpudlian vibe to this episode. We could sit here and talk about this episode for about half an hour, and we probably will. And there's so much good stuff in it, but then there's that
whole... What is wrong with you today?
I don't know. All right, listen, let's go back slightly and say, I'm going to say, I sat through it and I I generally enjoyed it, but it did feel a bit of a letdown compared to the previous five episodes. But you know, everything that we've said in previous podcasts, and you know, watching things and events and characters being introduced in strange ways, such as or then slightly developed in strange ways, I should say, such as with the Grand Serpent last week. I guess it could only have been a bit of a letdown, but and we'll talk about this as a conversation after I finish monologuing. The main disappointment for me was that I don't feel that the Doctor's trap for the Sontarans and Daleks inside him, I don't feel as if it was realised in quite the right way. It didn't seem to have the right scale for me. It just didn't punch it home for me, and I think that's what let me down the most. But what do you think about the episode?
As I always say, you know, you can't have a bad end. You can have a bad middle and a bad beginning, and I don't think it was a bad end. I think it wouldn't deter you from watching The Flux again. But as we did say, there was just too many plates, to use your analogy, your metaphor, in the air. Is that a mixed metaphor now? There was too many things being juggled, and yeah, it just didn't. I felt there was no emotional core to it because it didn't allow itself the space to do anything because it didn't have the. It had set too many things in motion to do effectively as a sixth episode, and therefore I think any time there could have been an emotional beat, there wasn't one. You kill off one of the main supporting characters, which I'm sure to Chibnall's horror has been horrendously popular, and there's quite a few angry people on Twitter that he was killed off. But there's no response from Yaz or Dan from that, despite there being 3 years working with him. And that to me felt like that's where you need your payoffs. That's where you land your emotional moments that give people the, you know, the satisfaction of digesting drama. Mm. And I think that was a lot of the problems for me. And I think, again, the Grand Serpent, because the Grand Serpent wasn't the master or anything like that, as people have been speculating.
Hello.
Or doesn't seem to be anyway at the moment, still could be. He did seem to have a lot of interest in the Doctor and presence there, which didn't seem to be previously there. And the whole unit thing felt very much for the Doctor to some reason. But we assume he isn't. He really played no point in this. So you could have removed the unit stuff from last episode. You could have removed him from this episode and you wouldn't have had much difference. And you'd have had more space to actually do drama. And I think that to me was the problem. I mean, again, you create Swarm and Azure, who are the big bad in episode one with mystery and potential. And by the end of it, they're kind of sidelined for the Sontarans.
Yeah.
And the Sontarans we dealt with in episode two, and they're doing the same thing really in episode six. It's like, fine, but kind of been here before. And no offense, but you know, the Sontarans are fun, but they're kind of a one beat thing. We need, you know, your drama in theory is in Azure and Swarm, because they have a connection to the Doctor's past. They have a connection to the Flux. They're your central characters. And yet you've ignored them to bring back the Sontarans again, which, again, it depends on what's more popular. I'm sure some people didn't like them and prefer Sontarans. But I felt... So when it comes to the scene that you didn't like, I kind of felt the same. I didn't feel visually it realised what they were trying to do. It didn't come across clearly enough.
Mm.
What was happening. And I think that's a bit of a lack of direction. I think it was quite a big concept, which probably required one of those metaphors, you know, like those ones. I was watching Star Trek the other day and they do one of those big sort of scientific things. And then Troy just suddenly goes, so like a message in a bottle. And you just think, it's really annoying. You think, just get out, Troy, get out. But at the same time, you need that sometimes. Mm. And I don't think they really had that. And perhaps they needed it while they were setting that stage up, because it just didn't seem to really flow well. I thought the ideas of it were good. I kind of liked the idea of matter and antimatter. I quite liked the idea of turning the Sontarans battle against plans against them. That was all fine. I just felt, you know, you do a six-parter. It felt like this needed to be seven parts or eight parts.
Yeah.
So you could land these things in a way that didn't feel cluttered. And I think that's a shame. I kind of felt that for this last episode, you would have sort of expected it to be more about the Doctor, Swarm and Azure. And instead we have the Brigadier running around the place. We have the Grand Serpent running around the place. You know, we have Sontarans running around the place. And in my head, that's just like, you're eating up time. You're eating up valuable space here to be really exploring some of the interesting things you've done. And the same with Dan's wannabe girlfriend, whose name suddenly escapes me, as it does because I never come prepared, you know, and Vinda. And obviously that sets up how they get rid of the Flux. But again, is it really? I mean, they were quite interesting scenes. I had nothing against any of the scenes. But the takeaway at the end is you come away with no feeling of emotional satisfaction, no comment about the fact that the Flux has destroyed most of the universe, and that's kind of forgotten as well, which, yeah, I'm sure will be brought back next episode. I'm sure that will be considered. But in terms of ending it, there's a weird thing, like when she's standing over the console thinking about dropping the watch into the console, and my brain's thinking, you know, all these seconds you could be using to be exploring some of the things that you've not really dealt with, because just so much just hasn't felt like it's been tapped into. But yes, I'm very much on your side on this, I think.
Okay.
It was enjoyable, but I don't think it was rewarding.
Yes, I would go along with that. And let's switch over to Facebook now. And if you're just joining us for the first time, firstly, where have you been? Secondly, why are you here now? And thirdly, welcome. We regularly, but not always, because sometimes I forget, ask opinions of you, the listener, on Facebook. So if you have Facebook and you follow us, we are facebook.com/thecasterbris, and we get responses incredibly. And so yesterday I posed the question, so it's all over, or is it? What did you think of Doctor Who Flux 6, The Vanquishers? And some regular responders and a couple of new ones. We'll start at the top. Lewis David Blaney says he doesn't know. I enjoyed it and I enjoyed many of the ideas, but there were so many characters, including a gaggle of doctors, that the episode felt overstuffed in places. The Grand Serpent didn't need to be in the story at all, and by the end I was disinterested by Swarm and Azure, and Bell and Vinda were there. However, I loved seeing the Sontaran, Dalek and Cyber fleets combined, and I loved how the Doctor stopped the Flux. Perhaps I need to give this a second viewing and do a binge of all six parts over a day or two. Imperfectly epic Village of the Angels, still best of the six parts. I suppose we should probably mention the three Doctors.
Yeah, I'm still, my head's still wrapped around your opening for this. Where have you been? Why are you here? It's the most bullyish sort of approach, where you're actually condemning them for not being here and then actually accusing them for why the hell are you here?
Yes, the sixth Doctor approach.
To the segment.
Yeah.
And then welcome, just to really upset them.
Three Doctors.
The three Doctors. I like that. I think the funny thing is the episode almost like an essay.
It's the podcast of bad analogies. Don't worry about it.
It was screaming, like, I am wholly aware that this episode is too full.
Yeah.
And to deal with this, my characters are constantly going to be saying that there's too much to do. And also, I'll split my main character into three in a very innovative and fun way of managing my overburdened episode. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if the episode knew and was conscious that it was just too full.
Yeah.
It couldn't do everything in a normal order, so it had to break everyone out. And then it tried to manipulate that into a dramatic approach. And that worked. It did. It did create, it, you know, while there wasn't emotional drama there, there's energy. There's a pace to it, which is exacerbated and made more exciting. The style and the tone is made more exciting by having these three Doctors playing and jumping between them. And I thought that was great. I really liked it. However, as I say, you still didn't have the space to really land any of those punches, which is, as I think has just been said there.
Liam Forrestal says, pass. Bar the Alderton-penned Angels ep, it was a mess akin to Trial of a Time Lord. Chibnall delivered his own Pip and Jane Baker scripts. Bit harsh. That's me saying bit harsh.
I don't buy that at all. No. I mean, that series, in all fairness to it, was dealing with it. Well, I mean, we don't know. This series might be dealing with a lot of political stuff, but there was a lot of internal stuff going on there, obviously within the actual creative side and within the, you know, within its BBC position. I don't think it's a fair. I mean, some of Trial of the Time Lord was fine. I think it's also worth saying, because it becomes this point where there's like a spectrum, isn't there? As we've said before, there's Trial of the Time Lord, there's Children of Earth, or some people might say Dalek's Master Plan. I don't know. I don't think many people can really say that, because not many people have actually seen it at the time. But out of those two, I would say that this is more towards Children of Earth. I think it was it did what it intended to do. It had its own tone. It had its own aesthetic. Its pacing was consistent pretty much throughout, which was crazy. It didn't feel unbalanced like Trial of the Time Lord. It didn't feel underconfident as Trial of the Time Lord did. I think those are. I think that's an unfair comparison. Of course, that's his opinion and their opinion, and that's fine. And I appreciate that. But I don't know. I kind of feel that there was a lot of good stuff here, which I think gets lost, and will probably be celebrated in 10 years' time.
Well,
each to everyone's opinion.
Nick Oldfield, an episode with an awful lot of ground to cover. I broadly think it did it, but we'll have to watch again. The Grand Serpent seems not fully to belong. It's clear he could have had a story all to himself. Otherwise, we get something that actually stopped the flux, but was any damage actually reversed, or is it a large piece of the universal FUBAR that had been hidden in plain sight? Sort of nice getting Die, that was her name, yeah, to think of it. But why did she remain in that thing on her own at that point? He goes on. What does Carvanista do next? Which is a good question. And for the series as a whole, I've enjoyed it. Lots of ambition, some big ideas, some of which actually felt new, more hit than miss. Aaron Hollins felt it was ... okay. A lot of things wrapped up in a way that made sense, although I'm still quite confused about what the ravishes are. I think the ravagers, aren't they? Are they ravish? I think they must be ravagers. They don't go around ravishing people.
Yes.
It's not very threatening. Well, I mean, it's unwanted, I suppose. It's threatening in that way. So yeah, but it's not so much for sci-fi, I don't think. Maybe Torchwood. But what it was very exciting. The nice thing is it didn't taint the high points of the rest of the series. This is the most engaged I've been with Doctor Who in a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would agree with that. Rich Goldtree, so many plot points to tie it up. It took three Doctors to do it. Too many loose ends to resolve in one episode. Loose ends, I don't know what he's talking about. Nigel Webb says, I think Chibnall did a very sensible thing and left the timeless child thing buried but able to be resurrected by another writer, so the Doctor remains half-human. David Madeley, epic fail. Why have five episodes of pure build-up and have a very unsatisfying final episode? Very disappointed. Trevor Arthur enjoyed it, had good pace, lots going on, and the split Doctor was done well. Couldn't wait for everything to tie up at the end. Now I'm really looking forward to your podcast to make sense of it all for me. Sorry, Trevor.
Well, the eighth, I think if it had, I kind of feel that they'd have probably been better off doing like the six episodes and then the New Year's one, tying this up with probably a slightly New Year spirit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's things which I think one of the big mistakes it made was, again, and this is always the problem, is it's easy to create a mystery box. It's always very easy to create questions, but it's very hard to answer them, you know, in an interesting question, answer it in an interesting way. And like, for instance, the house of her past is a really lovely concept, and it was beautifully rendered in black and white. And I kind of felt like you could do an episode within that house, not really telling us anything, but you know, giving us symbolism, giving us threat. You could still tie stuff in the background. You could have done that for episode six. And episode six could have finally sorted out Azure and Swarm in a way that made them feel relevant, but you get them all out of the way and then focus on your final battle, which is sorting out the Flux and the Suntarans. Because quite frankly, by this point, it seems like Azura and Swarm have no real, you know, apart from saying, oh, we're going to enjoy this and we're going to keep controlling this. But ultimately, the final event, they don't really have any role in.
I didn't really feel
trying to repeat it.
I didn't really feel like they quite, I mean, obviously there's that whole sort of being able to disintegrate things and put them back together and disintegrate them. But I really didn't feel that they had any kind of hook to, you know, I mean, I think of classic Doctor Who villains like, Harrison Chase or Solon or any of those guys. And, you know, I could be picking Shara's Jack or someone later, or even the character in Professor Lazarus. I know what they want to do, and I get an idea of where they've come from. But these guys, even though we saw them in this dim and distant past, or saw Swarm in this dim and distant past, and then being released from prison, or getting himself out of this prison, whatever, I never really felt that I knew what they were and what they wanted.
And I think the problem was is that their end goal was secondary, because their end goal was actually not what was going on. Because at the beginning, you're thinking, oh, they've created the flux. You know, they are part of the flux. Their power seems quite fluxy. But then later you find, well, the fluxy sort of nature of them is kind of like the flux, in the fact it sort of takes people apart. It's about deconstructing life. So they have that relationship, but they're not related to it. So what the flux is actually nothing to do with them. So in the end, they become bit players.
Yeah.
That, like the Centaurans, so they're just trying to just take advantage of the situation for their own ideology. And I don't think you really get to understand their ideology till too late. And by the time you do, they're no longer main players anymore, because you've just found that they're there to try and do something for themselves, which actually has no real impact on the story. Because once the final event's done, our story's gone. So no matter how many times they reverse and replay that and enjoy the satisfaction of destroying, well, you know, our engagement is gone by that point, because we've already lost. It's almost like at the end of an old video game where you die and you can see everything else going, still carrying on, and your character's left dead and everything is still, and you don't sit and watch everything else still going on. You just start the game again.
Yeah.
You know, once you've got to that point, what happens after is immaterial. And what they wanted was what happens after. So, yeah, they really lost it. They made a mistake. So they had no real goal. They had no real motivation. I think you needed that. You needed to really feel what they wanted and feel the stress of what they wanted. But what they wanted was already happening.
Yeah.
So in that last episode, they weren't doing anything. They were just standing there. And I think that's a shame. And I think the sad thing is, like, there's that scene with the Doctor in Azure. And I think it's a really nice scene. It doesn't really tell you anything, but it's a really nice scene between the two actors. And I kind of feel that you need to let your characters do that. And this episode wasn't letting them do it. I think the fact, as I say, you don't see Dan or Yaz mourn for the loss of a friend they've had for 3 years is a really big mistake.
Yeah.
Because that takes away from that dynamic. I mean, surely if you're going to create that sort of dynamic and that sort of solidarity between characters, you can't not show the impact of that. I mean, just because this guy is the only guy in the Doctor Who universe who seems to have a desperate desire to follow in the footsteps of Adric, it doesn't make, you know, you still got to mourn him. I mean, God, Adric got mourned. Adric got a bit of mourning. He just disappears. And I think that's a shame. And there's a little bit of me, one of my family said this, and I know it's probably taking a little far, but there's that kind of bit of, a little bit of sort of systemic ageism in it, that because he's an old guy, that he'd be all right dying now, because he's seen enough, he's done enough, and he's willing. And I know maybe I'm being a bit unfair. Maybe they'd have said the same. It'd have been the same dialogue for any character in that position. But I don't know. It just kind of feels like, well, because he's old, he can be killed off. While if Yaz was in that position, we'd be sort of like, oh my God, but she's so young. You know, it's like, well, they're still beings. That person has still got a life ahead of them. And I don't know. It just felt so unnecessary as well, because he didn't do anything. That's why I felt like Adric. You know, really, his death meant nothing.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like he needed to put a death in there to make it feel like the victory was meaningful. But the death means nothing if no one mourns the death. So I think that was, again, a massive mistake. And I think that's probably, if he's reading the feedback from the episode, maybe he's realizing it, that it did nothing. It didn't motivate the story. And it didn't even have any emotional impact. You just got rid of one of your characters that people liked, almost without thought. Yeah, that makes me quite annoyed in retrospect. But
Yeah. I think
yeah,
looking
I think
back,
like the time. Go on.
well, I was going to say, looking back, I'm kind of talking about Jericho and other people that have been in the episodes. The casting of this series has been excellent. I haven't looked at anyone and
Yes, it
thought they've
has.
been terrible or they're out of place. Every single one of them has been excellent.
Still not sold on Yaz, though, unfortunately. Even
Okay.
though she's played fine, as I say, I think Mandip does a good job. Character-wise, again, like Mel and Rose, and there is an interesting, I suppose we should mention it. There is an interesting there's a gay vibe going on, which seems to be very deliberate between Yaz and the Doctor, and I don't think it's ever going to even culminate to the level of Rose. And for the same reason, I don't think you can be annoyed by it unless you were also annoyed by Rose. And if you were like me, then maybe you can be annoyed by it. But it is interesting that they're going there, and it's just kind of like an affectionate subtext. Some people might say, "Oh well, you're reading too much into it." But I'd certainly say if you swap genders and put a man in that place, you would think that there was tension there. But again, in a sense, it feels like the Doctor, because Yaz is a carbon copy of Rose, effectively. I mean, she's got the same sort of motivation, same sort of agenda, same sort of almost arrogance in herself, self-confidence, if we're being kind. And the Doctor seems to really like that in people. So it kind of makes sense. But she unfortunately does nothing for me. But yeah, so that was kind of interesting that they've done that, though. That's to say, it doesn't bother me at all. What about the tunnels? The tunnel thing, again, it's felt like an idea that it felt very much like a new series idea.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really seem to. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it had a relevant point to the story.
I think
I don't know.
I like
Yeah.
the idea of the tunnels, but I do wonder if they were kind of sidelined for other things.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's my problem with it. And while they did their best to give the backstory in this episode, the backstory, I don't know, it still didn't really feel full fleshed out. I think sometimes things feel like they're on the precipice between being an interesting bit of story and being a useful bit of plot,
Yeah.
a device to motivate the story. And it kind of felt like it was always tipping into the latter rather than the former, which is a shame. But yeah, I feel bad now, because I feel like I'm pulling it apart when I watched it and I didn't dislike it at all. And Jodie Whittaker was brilliant throughout it. I
Yes, she
thought
was.
she was. I think the one thing the Flux as a series will have certainly should have done is actually confirm that she was a good choice, and she really held that story together. But yeah.
Yeah,
And also,
those.
we didn't. Bell and Vinder didn't end up being the Doctor's
No,
mum yet.
imagine that. And I'm a little bit. I feel like something more dramatic should have happened with those two than just finding each other. I
Yeah,
feel that
I
they've
totally
been
agree.
slightly wasted.
I can't help feeling if this was done like a proper Netflix series, and this has obviously gone the way of the Netflix, which is good, and been like 10 episodes long, it would have been so much better. Because you could have dealt with Bell and Vinder and had them gone by episode 8 and moved on, so they don't feel like they're sort of left dangling. You could have dealt with that sufficiently.
Yeah.
You could have dealt with the Grand Serpent as an episode on its own. You could have dealt with the Azor, as I say, and Swarm, and then finished off with the Sontarans. And I think what speaks to this is going back to what I said a few weeks ago. It wasn't my point, as I said at the time, so I'm careful to make it sound like it was mine. But the act for 6 parts, act one didn't finish on the second part. You didn't really find the stakes and the goals and where the story's going to the end of episode 3. So it kind of feels like the balance of the series has not been right. If that was end of act one, that would suggest you need 9 episodes rather than 6,
Yeah.
to me. And I think that is probably the Flux's mistake, and it's just a logistical thing that it's just too big an idea for 6 episodes.
The other thing about the tunnels is that they're still there.
Yeah. True.
So anything could happen there.
The TARDIS as well is still technically a mess. And I think from some of the shots of the next week, that might still be a next episode, the Christmas New Year's one. Mm. That might still be something which is to be dealt with.
Yeah. Did you, so you watched the trailer?
I did this time.
All right.
I think because I'd already been spoiled on social media that the Daleks are back again for another New Year's.
Right. I didn't know that.
You're joking. You didn't know?
No, I didn't know. No.
For God's sake. I normally, you are the one who's watched the trailers and you knew all this. And no, so I thought, I'll join in this time. No. And this time is the time you didn't do it.
I watched the trailer, but I didn't know prior to that the Daleks.
Oh, you didn't know beforehand? No. Well, no. I knew because I watched it on iPlayer a little later than aired.
Yeah.
I accidentally scrolled past one of the BBC Pros, which showed the Daleks. And I was like, oh, okay. So it didn't seem a problem to watch the little bit of trailer since I knew that. But yeah, I mean, that's an odd choice. I wonder if that's contractual. It seems odd that every year now, for the last 3 years, the Christmas or New Year one has had to be a Dalek.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it? I think you're probably right in some way. There probably is some contractual thing where they have to use the Daleks as the main villain in an episode. Although, I don't know.
Maybe each time he comes to the New Year and he's like, I want to build on the Dalek episode. You know, he's a big fan. So maybe each year he wants to do a good Dalek episode and that's the space to do it. The challenge of doing something interesting. Because each time he does a Dalek episode, he is definitely trying to do something different with them.
And also, I suppose you've got the, I wouldn't say captive audience, but you've got a lot of people just sat in front of the TV wanting to be entertained. And you've got that sort of classic Doctor Who and the Daleks in different shapes.
So there could be the cynical person and obviously the person who dislikes the show at the moment would probably advocate this loudly, is that, you know, the show uses the Daleks at New Year's because it's desperate to get those figures. And they're obviously a famous, iconic draw. And it could be that. I don't know.
But
I must admit, I was a bit like, Daleks again.
Oh, were you? Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think I was a little bit surprised, but not surprised. So maybe I had known beforehand, maybe I would have been, oh, Daleks again. But I don't think it's a big deal, really. It's not like anyone, again, calling back to the childhood of the 80s and 90s, the Doctor Who and the Daleks or Dalek Invasion Earth. We're on regularly on holidays, and you know that doesn't happen now because they look a bit dated. So they're the sort of things that you find on the Horror Channel or Talking Pictures, rather than on mainstream television, I think. So it's not. I don't think it's a big deal, really.
But what I would like to see, and maybe they will do, a bit like in 2000 AD, Judge Dredd. Initially, that Mega City one was 800 million. And over the last 40 years, it's now down to about 100 million people.
Oh, Christ.
Because of all the various disasters. And I kind of wonder whether that's something the Doctor Who should do and embrace what has happened with the Flux. And actually, and like the Marvel Universe does, is acknowledge a big event and run with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Marvel's done that with obviously with the finger snap and the social ramifications of that, the snap. So I think having the Flux staying like this, I suppose the Flux was current day, wasn't it?
Yes.
So that means all your future time is a mess. And I think that would be interesting. And they've still got the multiverse now they can start tapping into if they want. But I certainly think if you want to change the dynamic of the show, here you've got something to do that with. It'll depend on whether Davis wants to carry that through or whether he'll want to do something on his own terms.
Yeah, I mean, we're only 3 episodes away from that, really, aren't we?
Yeah.
So that's, I don't think, I mean.
So when are the next ones? So we've got one at New Year. I know she doesn't finish till the autumn.
Yeah, so I believe there's one at Easter time, whether it's actually Easter weekend or whatever. And then the final one is designed, or big pun, is intended to coincide with the BBC centenary, which is later next year. Not as late as this, I don't think. Sort of September or October sort of time next year, as I understand it. That might not be 100% right. It might be slightly earlier than that. But there's definitely one due at Easter time. Definitely. And I don't think we know when 2023 is going to come round, other than obviously it'll start on the 1st of January 2023. But in terms of Russell T Davies
in terms of Doctor Who.
Stewardship. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they kicked it off as close to March the 26th as possible, because that's when Rose was on. And I think they'd probably aim for that sort of period of the year rather than the later period.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes with it. I mean, this last week, on a sort of sidebar, I watched most of the Angel episodes. I had a conversation with family over the Weeping Angels and the question, what was the question that they were confused over? Oh, yeah, because I think, as I've said to you before, the way to get rid of a Weeping Angel is they're quantum locked. If anything sees them, and the argument was it has to be human. I was like, no, it's meant to be a quantum mechanic thing.
Here, yeah.
That if they're seen by anything, they can't move. Which, if you think about it, makes the Statue of Liberty one really stupid. So, I went back and watched all those. I watched Blink and the two part in series 5, and then the Angels Take Manhattan. And it was quite interesting to watch the evolution and how those angels have been used. And it was also interesting that initially it didn't seem like it mattered too much how many times you were knocked back through time by an angel. They could feed on you multiple times, while now you can only do it once. But it was kind of interesting to see how they've changed over the time, and how brilliant Blink was as well. Rewatching Blink, I'd totally forgotten how excellent that story is. In terms of its writing, its drama, its pace, its ideas, really, really, really strong. And again, Time of the Angels, again, is a really strong one. I find River still very difficult. Can't get with that at all. It's just too invasive and too much of a pushy character, which I still think, bless Alex Kingston, still wonder whether it was miscast. I don't know, from my perspective anyway. But still a brilliant story. And they all, including Alex, do a great job throughout in doing their role. It's really interesting to see the progression of a villain, of a monster, and where they've shifted and changed. And I kind of like this idea of them being far more sort of naughty and mean, which is very evident when you watch them in order. But yeah, I also kind of like the idea that you can get away with those moments where they don't seem to move when they should be moving by the fact that something is seeing them. It could be a bee, it could be a fly.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're screwed. So, you know, if you ran through a zoo with an angel following, it would be screwed. You know, if you went through a bee farm, they'd be absolutely rubbish. That's all you need. So, you know, a jar of honey in a bee farm, and you know, that's it's just interesting that the show doesn't really pick up on that, and how light and dark is the key thing they use to enable them. But I suppose my point here is that there's been some interesting things in this run, and it's kind of fun to go back and see where some of the evolution of these things has come from.
Yeah,
I'd certainly recommend watching Blink again, because they're far more scary in Blink as well, I think.
Yeah. I think I've watched Blink in the last couple of years, and it does stand up well. Played a game yesterday called B-52, by coincidence, which is an old Codemasters game from the early 90s where you collect honey. I mentioned that because there's something that we haven't talked about in this episode. Suntaran's eating chocolate.
Yes.
What was that all about?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of felt a little out of character, but
it reminded me of something. There's something where someone eats chocolate and they get power. I can't think what it is, though.
No, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm surprised, because I almost
imagine. Oh no! Do you know what it is? Do you remember the glitter ball? Do you remember the glitter ball? The old, I think it was the Children's Film Foundation sci-fi thing. About a metal globe from outer space that ate chocolate to replenish itself.
There you go.
I think that was it. Oh, I feel like I'm going to have to Google this now. But anyway, what do you think about Sondheim's eating chocolate?
Well, I mean, it was fun. But, I mean, you could get anal and go, well, why do they need chocolate? Because I got the impression that their ventral feed gave them everything they needed.
Yes.
On top of information, I imagine it gave nutrition and energy, and I don't see why, if they're designed for battle, why would they have taste buds? And I don't know. I mean, it was, again, to me, it was kind of frustrating because it felt like this is an element of the storyline which we probably don't need. It just feels like an excuse to use a lot of these characters that you've built up in and built upon. Because ultimately, they could have found where the final flux was other ways, or it could have been that the Centaurans had already found it out. They'd already worked it out through psychics. And again, when you've got an episode which has so much going on, you've got to be so precious about what you put on screen. And I think it was simply there to give a little bit of comedy in a crazy episode. Sadly, I think the episode needed just a little bit more moments of introspection and drama. I mean, you've destroyed half a universe, if not more, most of the universe. And there's no sense of that. And maybe that would have been a better outro, would have been them just sort of looking out at a destroyed universe, that the victory is a hollow victory.
Yes, yes.
That, to me, would have perhaps been a little more in keeping with not just what they've done, but also that sort of British sort of nihilistic sense that we do have in our sci-fi. I don't know. It was such an odd episode, isn't it? Because it's one of those episodes where it's so easy to pull it apart and dislike it for various reasons. Well, not dislike it, but criticize it. And yet ultimately, I did not enjoy it, to double negative. It was fun. I just kind of feel it could have been a little better.
Yeah, if tighter. It was definitely trying to do too much with the characters. And I think we can agree. And I kind of like Craig Parkinson because he does threatening well.
Absolutely.
But I think he was not necessary.
No, I don't think he was as well. I think they'd have been better introducing him again as the Grand Serpent somewhere outside the story. I don't think he... I mean, the idea that things would flock to this planet, fine. But you don't flock someone we don't really know who suddenly can time travel. I don't know. It just felt like the wrong thing. And it just felt so unnecessary. And it almost felt to me like sometimes I wonder with Chibnall knowing he's leaving, whether these tiny ideas that he wanted to do, which he just hadn't had time to do, which he was dropping in there, like UNIT, like he wanted to do something with UNIT that he'd set up and never got time to do. And this was his attempt to try and put that in there. And it just felt like it was the wrong time to do it. He just got in the way, which is a shame. And as I say, I felt that last week and I felt it this week. Doctor Who just has a problem that it gets too... it should be busy. It should be crazy. And six parts is great for Doctor Who because Doctor Who can travel across anything, can't it? So it can be crazy. It can be wacky. And it has been throughout Flux. But it's also got to have moments where it can show its heart. And the old series never did that. And I suppose classic fans could say, and they probably won't, but they would say that this was the closest thing to old Doctor Who. If people are complaining that it was too busy and didn't give enough satisfaction, well, you got to look at classic Doctor Who because it rarely did that. You know, characters appeared and were killed off. Stories were ended and the Doctor just walked off. You never really got anything, chunky. It didn't do chunky drama. And now we kind of expect it to, because that's what we have in television. It's what Davis set up to a degree as well. And we see echoes of that. And we look and go, where's the chunky drama here? Where's that moment of, like in Utopia, with the Doctor and Jack? It's like two or three scenes in there where you've just got chunky scenes of interaction, which are really enjoyable. Now I'm asking you, where is that?
I don't know. Well, I think the chunky drama is probably next to the chunky Kit Kat.
Maybe. You're just drawing us back to Centaurans now.
I'm drawing us back to the chocolate, because whilst you've been eloquently explaining your point of view on that, I've remembered where...
You've been looking through the internet for your bloody television show about chocolate. Is that what you've
been doing?
It
wasn't a TV show. It's a book. It's a Lady Bird science fiction book, which came out in the late 70s, early 80s, called The Energy Pirate. I don't do this often. I wrote a Twitter thread about it in 2018. Because I felt it feels like a Doctor Who story, specifically a season 17 reject. Just to paraphrase, it begins with an empty sweet shop and some alien hats. Yes, you heard me right. Alien hats are stealing all the chocolate from this shop. And then there's a main character called Professor Gamma. And he's the main character, Kirill's grandfather. So and he has a sonic pipe, or some sort of sci-fi pipe. So you can see where I'm coming from with this Doctor Who comparison. I'm going to put this in the show notes.
You can see where they're coming from.
Yes. I'll put this in the show notes anyway. So yeah, those creatures, alien. In fact, some of the hats also look like Vardan helmets, but they eat chocolate. Anyway, these alien hats that eat chocolate. Oh, and there's a character that looks like Felix Baunus from Heidi High as well. So, So I quite like that thing about the Sontarans in the shops. It was just silly. It did feel like that sort of late 70s Doctor Who element to it as well. Although maybe even what was then, people tend to refer to now as the Tom Baker Show, even that didn't go as silly as having Sontarans eating chocolate from shops.
No, but I suppose Davis would have, if it felt right. Or Moffat would have, certainly. But it did feel a little out of character, but yeah, I agree. It was fun, and I think sometimes you just got to let the show be fun, and I think it is having a lot of fun at the moment, and that's really great.
Yeah, something it didn't have in the previous two seasons. It didn't have that sort of aspect of fun to it. It seemed to be on a bit of a mission, whereas now it does seem to be a little bit more relaxed and more confident.
It felt very much more, it did feel, I think relaxed and confident is how I'd probably describe the Flux. I mean, yes, as we say, there's lots of things you can criticise it for. But it tonally felt consistent all the way through, really. Jodie was consistent all the way through. I never felt, apart from that opening scene, as I say, the very first episode, which was just awkward and the way it was written, I've never had any problems with any of it. I thought she was brilliant throughout. I keep saying this. I've said it over multiple weeks. This, to me, felt the nearest thing to Classic Who that I have seen since 2005. And in some ways, the superficiality of it is very much like Classic Who, which was very superficial. I mean, you can label the dramatic moments on your hand for Doctor Who in the classic series. There weren't that many. And mainly they were speeches.
Yeah.
People remember the speeches, you know, the Doctors, but you actually try and find moments of drama. You know, small things like maybe Tegan leaving or Adric dying. You know, there's a few scenes in McCoy's which suddenly become big scenes. You know, the Indian tea company and the sugar cube in Remembrance of the Daleks. You know, you're really struggling to find them because they just aren't there. Pertwee leaving, maybe Joe, which is more understated than, but that's fine. They're just not there. So yeah, this felt very much like that. So I think, you know, if you're a big fan of classic Doctor Who and you dislike Jodie immensely and the stories, you think, well, you know, to be honest, this is Chibnall has been given throughout his era. He's been, seems to me, been trying to recreate classic Doctor Who, for better or worse, and, you know, hit and miss maybe. But that first season was very much 1960s Doctor Who brought into the 21st century with varying success. This felt the same. This is perhaps what Trial of the Time Lord would like to have been.
Mm.
We'll see. We'll see whether all this stuff plays out into future ones, which maybe it will.
Before we finish, James, rating time.
Okay.
I'll go first. I'm going to say 6.5.
Okay, so is that rating based on as a finale or as a story?
As an episode.
Because maybe you could have... You could give two ratings.
I could give two ratings. Love your ratings. Yes, I was going to. I was just going to wait to find out what your episodic rating was.
Okay, right, okay. So my episodic... I'd say 7.
Okay. Okay, my series rating is 8.
So what? Okay. So what I meant was like as a finale, and rating as an episode. But also, since you seem to be obsessed with the power of three for this episode, this podcast, so you could also do how does it work as an overall? So, as an episode, as a finale, and as the Flux as an overall series. Okay. So you've got three there. That's exciting for you, Christian. You've got three attempts to do this.
All right. So episode 6.5, finale. Okay. 7.5, and as a for a series 8.
Okay, so I think I would go with As an episode, I think I'd go with 7.5. As a finale, I think it's lower. I don't think it's as satisfying in its finishing up the flux, so I give it a 7. And as a whole series, I think I'd give it 8.5. I think it was been no, maybe 9, because it's the first time since Classic Who I think that I've really been engaged in wanting to see it each week.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally, as a personal level, that's a big deal that I've actually, especially considering how much stuff there is to watch. And this month we've got, you know, the return of The Expanse, Titans comes back, The Witcher is on, there's the Boba Fett thing. You know, we're just bombarded with television now and films. To have something that you want to come back to weekly is a good score.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And it managed to make me want to forget everything else and come back on Sunday to watch this and look forward to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you've got to give it credit for that, because it's got a hefty competition now.
I think as well with previous series, even though Jodie's second series was, I think, better than the first, but both of those series, I did feel like watching Doctor Who was a little bit of a chore that I would then talk to you about the next day or a couple of days later. Whereas with this one, I've been really looking forward to watching it and really looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I still think a lot of that comes down from the breaking of the format.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was getting bored with, I was finding the same with Moffat. So even the fabled season 10, which everyone loves, and I must admit, wasn't too bad.
No.
I still felt the format was there. The format was, in the two-parters, the format was predictable. In the one-parters, the format was inevitable. So to have a series which was like 6 episodes where you didn't know where it was going to go, written by someone who deliberately put in a hell of a lot of different ideas early on to distract you and make you wonder which thread it's going to carry, it's been a great experience.
Yeah, definitely. So that brings us to the end of our look at Doctor Who Flux. And we'll be back for another podcast next time. Until then, it's goodbye.